Thank you, Paula. I really appreciate that. And I don't know what happened to my broadcaster. I turned it on and I only heard just a tiny little bit of it. Welcome, everybody. It's 10:10. We're about to start episode 70 of Coffee with the Coder. Thanks for being here today. We're excited to share Paula Digby with you and the questions that have come in. Well, some of them. And we can't wait to experience today's episode with you. I want to remind you that you'll find lots of good stuff at aq-iq.com, including documents to help your research and courses and webinars coming up and Earth Pro Labs and Revenue Warriors will open soon, so there's a waiting list there. All of that wonderful stuff. So good morning again to all of you who are new today. And hey, Paula, are you ready for the first question?
Sure. Good morning, everyone. Oh, and thanks for joining us. Tell your friends, and our list just continues to grow, and we love seeing you all here. Please send in your questions, not just for a chance to win a mug, which is, we've had some folks asking how to buy those mugs. You can only get them by winning them. So send in a question so you
Exactly.
can potentially win a mug, right? So I just wanted to say that as well. But definitely send in your questions because our bank is getting low. We want to keep this going. We need some questions, questions, questions.
Yeah, okay, I've got to hit the mute button just a second. Okay, so Paula, you can hit star six, and I'm going to head out this first question. I believe this is an inpatient rehab because she talks about an impairment group. And I don't know, it might not be a she. It's Taylor, because I know some ladies and some gentlemen named Taylor. Taylor's question is about a diagnosis and impairment group. And here's what happened. The patient fell and had a traumatic SDH, underwent a burr hole evacuation, and was discharged home, maybe like beginning of March-ish. And the patient was doing very well at home and even followed up in the office and didn't have complications. But 3 months later, the patient is back in the hospital with neuro complications. And the CT shows an accumulation of fluid diagnosed with chronic SDH. So after that, the patient went to rehab. They admitted the patient with etiologic non-traumatic chronic SDH, and the impairment group is traumatic closed injury. So I kind of feel like these two are conflicting with each other. Since she went home, or she was sent home following the traumatic accident without complications and weakness at home, it makes me feel like maybe it ought to be not traumatic. Is the chronicity of the injury that brought her back that makes me feel like the impairment group should not reflect traumatic, but I'm not sure. What do you say?
Okay. Yeah, so what she was saying is that, yeah, she was questioning whether it should be traumatic or not traumatic. And Taylor, when she asked this question, she and I went back and forth in email. And, now I'm actually revisiting this question after we went back and forth, and it's been a while. But I felt like it was such a good question that we needed to bring it back to Coffee with the Coder. So the definition of chronic subdural hemorrhage is a collection of blood on the brain surface under the outer covering of the brain or the dura. It is usually caused by a head injury. Now, another definition from the National Institute of Health states, it's an old clot of blood that is usually characterized by a history of head traumas. Now, the term usually means that it potentially something else could cause it. But, we agree basically, though, we would also choose traumatic, and the new condition is a result of the initial. What I would like to see, and it might require a physician query, is for the physician to associate the chronic SDH to, and, to the former injury, the brain injury. With brain injuries, can't sequela happen later? Well, I know that many of you are aware that I had a brain injury, and it did with me. That happened to me. So I had some sequela later on. It didn't happen initially, and I remember going through the medical treatment and going through the rehab and then getting home and new things popping up that, oh, wow, I didn't realize, that had happened. So absolutely, things can happen. And there's no, when you're coding sequela of injuries, there's no time frame that is set. It's not like it has to happen within this time frame or it has to happen, you know, before a certain time frame is ended. I worked with a woman years ago who had an eye issue that she had a sequela from the eye issue that had happened like 30 years previously. And so there's really no time limit. Now, wouldn't it be, as far as the etiologic, more appropriate to report the subdural hemorrhage sequela, which is the S06.5X0S, plus the code for the chronic subdural hemorrhage, that's I62.03. Now, our coding rules tell us that I62.03 is sequenced first because it would be a sequela of the head injury. Now, best practice, like I said earlier, is for the physician to associate the conditions in his or her documentation. Now, we may be a little stuck here if the physician doesn't associate the two conditions because our research reflects there is a rare potential that the chronic SDH is not caused by the head injury. That said, for strong, secure documentation, a query would be the best for clarity.
Thank you, and thank you, Taylor, for sending in that question. Now, this one is going to be for a physician practice in a hospital, and it comes to us from Nicole. She went to aqipanike.com, and at the Ask tab, it drops down to Coffee with the Coder, and she sent in her question right there. And so she says, when you're billing an OB delivery, when can you also bill the admission, not the global delivery code? So if you bill a delivery code only, 59514, can you bill the visit in the hospital as E&M codes that you see the patient until discharge? And so we talked to Nicole a little bit, and her practice and her doctor's practice and other doctors that do the same, they cover for each other. And so sometimes one doctor will cover the whole, everything except the delivery, and the other doctor will cover the delivery. And then the first doctor has to go back and do the postpartum. So was that enough details for that question, Paula?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna give the scenario that when we talked to her, she said she bills for the hospital and for the physician, and often her physician will do prenatal care, but another physician outside the practice will deliver the baby. So that's an important distinction there. And then Nicole's physician will do all the postpartum care in and out of the hospital. And when this happens, the physician who delivers the child bills for the delivery, and Nicole's physician works for free. So she says, isn't there a way to bill the care that her physician provides? And, okay, so I'm gonna go a couple different ways on this one because there's different ways that it could happen. So I restated the question a little differently. So I think what Nicole is saying is that, your OBGYN provides the antepartum and postpartum, but another physician provides the delivery. The second provider bills the global code, either 59400 for vaginal, and this is all about CPT coding, 59510 for C-section, or 59610 for VBAC, that's vaginal birth after C-section. When that other physician bills that, it indicates that he or she performed the entire anti-postpartum and delivery care. The second provider should not be reporting the global codes if they did not provide the global service. So that's the first thing. You may have to have some communication with that other practice. CPT understood that services could be provided by different providers, and so they made separate codes for each service. We have antepartum codes, postpartum codes, and delivery codes as if you only performed that service, so that you would bill each service that you provide. But if you provided all three, you would bill the global codes that we spoke about. So the provider performing the service would bill it as they performed it. For example, 59425 and 26 is for antepartum care only, and 59430 is for postpartum care only. If your physician provides the antepartum care and the postpartum care, he or she is going to bill those two codes, 59425 or 26, based on the number of visits, and 59430. And then the provider billing, doing the delivery would bill for the delivery-only codes that we, okay? So now, however, if you're asking it differently, you're saying your physician sees the patient one or two times in the antepartum period, and the other provider sees the patient for most of the antepartum and postpartum care and the delivery, but your physician sees the patient a few times. In that case, CPT sends you to report the appropriate E&M for the 1 to 3 visits. This is all considering that the two physicians are in two different practices, because if they're in the same practice, they adhere to the same global rules. We went out and looked at a few payers' rules on this, and it appears that, at least in the most recent years, they're changing policies related to different provider groups rendering portions of the antepartum or postpartum care. We saw payers clarifying that for providers that, consistent with CPT guidelines, by the way, if the provider performs 1 to 3 antepartum visits, they are billed with an E&M code. If they provide 4 to 6 visits, they're billed with the antepartum only care for 4 to 6 visits, which is 59425. Now, this cannot be billed by the same provider group billing the E&M for the 1 to 3 visits, because remember, it's considered global if you're in the same provider group. And if you perform 7 or more visits, it's considered complete antepartum care. So you would bill the complete antepartum care code. Now, also, what I'm going to read to you now are guidelines from ACOG, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists, for the antepartum care only codes 59425 and 26. I thought this was relevant, so I wanted to read it to you. It says, report a single claim submission of CPT code 59425 or 26 for the antepartum care only, excluding the confirmation visit that may be reported and separately reimbursed when the antepartum record has not been initiated. The units reported should be 1. The dates reported should be the range of time covered. For example, if the patient had a total of 4 to 6 antepartum visits, the physician group should report CPT 59425 with the from and to dates when the services were rendered. It says this new policy is in accordance with ACOG and the AMA CPT coding guidelines for obstetric services. So, Nicole, I hope that answered your questions. And if you had any questions, or if I didn't interpret your question correctly, please reach back out and we will readdress that.
Thank you, Paula. Thank you, Nicole and Taylor, for sending in those questions. And thank you, Paula, for all of that explanation. I love when you explain these things. So. And it's time now for our mugging for episode 70. And so those of you who are new, a mugging is we are going to give away an official Coffee with Decoder mug to one of these two people who ask a question. And so I've got their names on slips of paper on my desk and stirring them around. And let's see who's the winner. So, Nicole, congratulations. I will reach out to you and find out where to send your mug. Tell your friends about Coffee with Decoder and send in some more questions. Like Paula said, the question bank is getting a little bit low. The next episode will be August 26th, Monday morning at 10:10 Eastern, episode 71. Thank you.
Oh, join us for Insiders at 10, Pam.
That's right. And you can just be an insider. Just show up early.